On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning. Welcome aboard to another episode of The Big Fish. And an amazing first this morning through the technological magic of the Piscatorial Anthropomorphic Chamber. We'll be transforming our regular Big Fish correspondents into the fish of their dreams and getting a first-hand, a never-before-first-hand, or should I say first-fin, account of their watery world. It's The Big Fish, Think Like a Fish edition. I wonder what Nathan Walker will transform himself into. I've got a pretty good idea. He might be the king of the river, but we'll find out in just a moment. And Nathan is in Australia's biggest inland city, Canberra. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
And surprisingly enough, new tackle shops are opening up in Canberra. I won't plug it, but obviously you're in the tackle industry. You're a bit of a complete tangler, aren't you?
Yep. Certainly am. Yep, big things happening in the industry in Canberra as we speak. So
it's amazing.
On the horizon.
It's just amazing how much tackle is sold there, and a lot of it would, I guess, be for the South Coast trips, but also the Snowy Mountains. So we'll get you to have a look at both of those scenes. It's right in your backyard. How's it all faring?
It's going really well. Yeah. Well, the big thing at the moment is obviously the spawning run up in the Snowy Mountains, so the Yucabeen River primarily. They had good snowfall up there recently too, which has bumped the river levels up, and there's plenty of browns running up the river as we speak. So I'd say there'll be a big migration up there for the closing weekend. But yeah, it's all happening.
Oh, it's fabulous. If you don't mind communal fishing, don't mind sharing the water shoulder to shoulder with your fellow tanglers, if that's your thing, then and you're pretty relaxed and you don't give a stuff about losing a fish or not catching a fish or someone spooking the fish you're trying to catch, don't get too angry, then it might be for you.
Exactly right, yeah. Unfortunately, the crowds are there, but thankfully everyone's pretty respectful these days and keep their distance. So
yeah.
It's been pretty good the last few years.
And it was great talking to the crew from the Monero Acclimatisation Society, Steve Samuels and the gang who work with Snowy Hydro and National Parks to exclude cars from the riverbed, ruining the riverbanks and smashing the spawning reeds and all the rest of it. That's been a really positive step, the new car park there. Sure, people might have to do a little bit of a walk, but that's good for you in the alpine country, isn't it?
It is, 100%. Yeah, we've got to look after the riverbeds there, and the less wear and tear, the better.
Yeah, although walking up around 1,000 metres, if you're a city lowland dweller, it does take the breath away a bit, doesn't it?
Definitely does, yep, that alpine air.
Hearing much from the South Coast, Nathan?
South Coast's been good. A lot of guys chasing some big winter bream down the South Coast estuaries. Some, 40-plus centimetre specimens have been caught in the last few weeks. Some of these guys are pretty secretive with their exact locations, but, there's plenty of good oyster racks and structure you can fish all up and down the South Coast. But, yeah, big winter bream sort of the target this time of year.
Fantastic fish. Now, Nathan, I can see a change happening. I can see your mouth widening. I can see scales growing. You're shedding your clothing. You're going underwater.
Down I go.
He's transformed into a creature of the deep. What are you, Nathan?
I'm a big Murray cod. I'm the apex predator of the freshwater scene.
You're the king of the river. I thought
king of the river.
I knew you'd be the. I knew you'd be the top gun. No one wants to be a carp.
<That's right.
laughs> So take us through a day in your life down there under the water. You might be, in one of the beautiful reservoirs around Canberra. You might be in the mighty Murrumbidgee. Take us through a day in your life.
Yeah, the Murrumbidgee is one of the most popular habitat spots for cod in Canberra. So a typical day for myself, big Murray cod, I'd be tucked up in amongst some structure during the day, just taking it easy, nice and relaxed. Quite opportunistic, though. If anything is going to come into my little space and have a look, I'm going to eat them. I'm pretty angry in that sense. So don't get in my personal space or I'll attack or eat you. So,
how far are you prepared to swim to remove that intruder, though?
Well, that depends on the quality of the feed, I guess. I'm not going to come up and take a little mayfly off the surface, but certainly if a big bird happens to land on the water and is in distress, that's worth my effort to go up and get it.
That's where the fly fishermen come in, isn't it? They tie a big bird and they throw it on a telegraph pole. I know you use 10 weights and big rods, 8 weights, don't you?
Yep.
And even bigger for those giant cod. And in your experience as a cod, if something does land on the surface above your snag,
yep.
What triggers you to go it? And will you always go it with your mouth?
Mostly with the mouth, but I guess it depends how close it gets into my personal space. It has, like, a lot of guys have to be very accurate casters and get it right in the structure, like not just near it, right in there and multiple times to get me annoyed and triggered into wanting to attack. A lot of the times I'm not actually feeding, I'm just hitting out of aggression. I'm not always hungry, but if something annoys me enough, I'll have a whack at it with my mouth and sometimes with my tail. My only two defence mechanisms.
And when do you go out? When do you leave your home, your snug snag?
So I'm a creature of the night, as they say. I'll go on the prowl at the late hours, early hours of the morning when it's dark, and I can cruise around and look for lots of tasty morsels, but definitely night feeding.
And what about being caught a few times? What does that do to you?
It gets me very sheepish and makes me very wary and makes me harder to catch the next time. I start to wise up a bit after a while.
And I think there's a bloke called Nathan Walker who's made a few of the big cod around.
He has. He's been known to harass me quite a bit, that guy.
Around the ACT. And you don't know why he keeps pulling you out of the water saying g'day. And well, you don't even often pull them out of the water, do they? They just hang onto the mouth, revive them and let them go.
That's right, yeah. Most of the guys look after me pretty well. Quick snap and then back I go.
They're in love with you. They're in love with you. What are some of your favourite foods? What have you eaten in your long, long life to get to over a metre and 100 pounds?
You name it. Crayfish, small bait fish, big bait fish, water rats, lizards, birds, anything. I'm not fussy at all.
Golf balls. Even cheese.
That's right.
What about carp? Do you have a taste for carp, or are they a bit so-so?
I certainly do. Early on, being a new species into our environment, we were a bit sort of wary, but now they're a primary food source, the old carp, even up to a few kilos, as big as we can fit them in our gob.
Yeah, so you like a big meal.
100%.
And what about when it gets a bit cold, the water at this time of year?
Yeah, so a lot of the smaller guys will shut down for the winter and become a lot more inactive, but it's the big trophy metre plus fish that will stay reasonably active through winter. That's when all the trophy hunters come out chasing us. So, yeah, definitely winter time is primary trophy hunting time for the metre plus fish.
Yeah, and catch and release is the go if you
exactly.
Kill any of your brethren, people of pariahs, aren't they?
That's right, yep.
Yeah. Well, great talking to you, Mr. Murray Cod. We'll let you transform back into Nathan Walker now.
Beautiful.
Oh, Nathan, thanks for going down there and transforming into a fish for us.
Oh, no problem at all, Scott. My pleasure.
In our Think Like a Fish edition of The Big Fish. Have a good day there in the ACT. Catch you next time on The Big Fish.
Beautiful. Thanks, Scott.
Alex Bellissimo hangs out on Sydney Harbour, and there are a lot of good fish in Sydney Harbour at the moment. Beautiful water conditions, nice and clear. The blackfish are biting, the jewfish are turning up, the kingfish are still playing the game. We'll find out what Alex wants to be up next in our Think Like a Fish edition of The Big Fish.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Fishing rod, bait and a blanket and a spare in the garage. I've already locked the door. We could throw a line out and drift along the shore. It's not the kind of thing that you'd expect this girl to say, but life goes by so quickly and it's such a sunny day. Fishing. Do you wanna go?
We could head out to a little place I know. Let's go and throw a line, forget about the time. Fish, do you wanna go? And if luck is on our side, we might catch ourselves a little something special on our line. The little fellas are always first to bite, but we're hoping for a big one for our barbecue tonight. And everyone knows fishing's always better with a mate, and I can almost taste that juicy flathead on my plate. Fish, do you wanna go? We could head out to a little place I know. Let's go and throw a line, forget about the time. Fish, do you wanna go? On the bow. If the fish aren't biting, we can lie and watch the clouds. I've bought food enough for two. Gee, it's nice to share this fishing day with you. Fishing, do you wanna go? We could head out to a little place I know. Let's go and throw a line, forget about the time. Fishing, do you wanna go? 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 Fishing, do you wanna go?
Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's the Think Like a Fish edition of The Big Fish. To know a fish, to catch a fish, you've got to think like a fish. Alex Bellissimo, you are a ludric. Good morning.
I'm a vegan. Oh, no.
You're a vegan. You're a vegan fish.
Mate. Okay, so ludric generally feed on weed bait. So 90% of all ludric, 95% of all ludric caught traditionally are caught on hairweed or cabbage weed. Cabbage weed is just that frilly weed that you see on the ocean rocks. The hairweed's actually, as the word is, it's like hair, okay? Now, harvesting hairweed in Sydney Harbour is not allowed, so I suggest you go to places along the, where I am along the northern beaches, so DY Swimming Pool or South Kelka, a good place to go. Mona Vale Pool, you can go and get some weed from there. And these places you can also legally get them as well. Ludric have only got quite a small mouth. Presenting a, say, a yabby, or a prawn or bread, you can catch a ludric on a much bigger hook, say even up to a 1-0. But when you're presenting weed baits, preferably stick around that size 8, number 8 hook. You can go up to a 10. I'd prefer to steer away from 12s. You can even go as large as, say, a size 6. A 6 or an 8. The 8 is a good happy medium. Fish under a stem float or a quill float. Fishing in North Harbour area, there's not much current, and you don't really have to cast too far. So fishing with a quill float or a light stem float, something that can handle up to, say, anything was, with small split shots or say a size 01 ball sinker is all you really need. Make sure that the actual float's weighted. It's only the tip of the stem that you're actually seeing. You're not seeing the actual ball of the foam ball of the stem. Which if you see the actual float with the ball of the float, and also the stem, it's unweighted. It needs to be weighted down.
What about depth? Depths are a big thing, and split shot. How do you find the depth that they're at?
Okay, so look at water depth itself, and you might have to just quickly cast out, make sure that your float's actually properly weighted with no bait. You could even throw it out with no hook. Right? So that way, when you're testing the depth, just have sinker on top of the swivel or just split shots, no hook there. So you've got nothing to hook up on. When you see the float tilt over, you'll find that the rig is settling on the bottom. So the last split shots or the sinker weight is settling on the bottom. And then, therefore, the indicator is that the float will start tilting over. Now, when you get like a bit of a wake from a ferry or a bit of chop, you'll notice that the float will slightly go underwater, sideways at 45 degrees, and then bob back up again. Now, that will actually tell you that you're actually fishing too deep. And what you do is you adjust the float. If it's a fixed float, you can slide it down slightly and only adjust it by only, say, 15 centimetres.
So you want to be about a foot from the bottom or so. Is that what you're looking for?
Preferably about a foot from the bottom. But the thing is, a lot of people find it quite perplexing comprehending how deep the water is. So an advanced angler can say, okay, that is approximately 3 metres of water and be pretty close to it. Where a lot of anglers go, I don't know the difference between it being 1.5 or 3 metres, and therefore they overweight it. The actual depth's too deep, and therefore they'll end up with a snag. So preferably, if you want to test the depth and you're not sure about where you're fishing, do it without a hook, and that way you've got less to hook up on. Because remember that a hook's like an anchor. It will catch up on the kelp, it will catch up on the ledge and so forth, and you can end up losing more than just your hook. You can end up losing your whole float just trying to work out the depth. At the end of the day, just take it into account. Only catch what you need. Release the rest. Take some pictures, and you can re-catch them again. So if you go there and then take a bunch of mates back there again and you keep banging the same spot over and over, there's two things that will happen. A, the remaining fish will become real smart and they won't eat. And B, you reduce the stocks to a point where you can catch hardly any fish. So Ludwig will be caught all winter time. Before now, throughout winter and up to spring as well. Look, year round, you can catch Ludwig year round. But people think that you catch Ludwig only in winter time, but you can catch them all summer as well. So it's just one of those things that people tend to snapper fever and kingfish fever and jewfish fever, and they don't want to fish for anything else. But you can catch Ludwig all year round. Wonderful fish, love them.
Great stuff. And I've heard that you can get them on some weird and wonderful things. I've caught plenty on squirt worms and blood worms and tube worms now that the blood worms aren't available. I've caught them on nippers very regularly. One fellow I spoke to swears they'll take green peas.
Mate, back in the Merck days, right, when the actual treatment works were going, right, now they eat peas and corn, right? And you think, why is peas and corn so good? Because back in when the treatment works were going, we would consume as humans peas and corn, right? Now the outer skin of the pea and corn, if it's not crushed, you poop it out and it goes through the cycle of going through the sewer outlet, and the sewer outlets were around North Head and Bondi and so forth. And I fished the outer outskirts of that, so with lots and lots of other fishermen. And the Ludwig you caught then and the rock blackfish were massive, right? Now it was because there was so much peas and corn.
Would that be your vegetable intake for the week, your serve of veggies when you ate that fish?
Well, I don't know, it's time of all the sales, isn't it?
It is indeed.
My veggie intake.
Things have improved immensely in Sydney Harbour with the deep ocean outfall and better, hopefully better treatment of our raw sewage.
Look, hopefully they'll get rid of the one at Rosa Gully, which is Diamond Bay. But anyway, yeah, back to peas and corn, they do work. Bread bait, white sliced bread, the whiter of the bread works fantastic. You should burley up with white mushy bread first before using bread. It works a treat. You also get chevalier, you get brim, you get a mixture of species, and obviously your lubric. It's great to sight fish. You'll see the crust floating up on the surface, and you'll see boils from lubric.
Get them going on it first? You know, you've got to
preferably
burley for a while before they'll turn to it. Yeah.
Yes, it's like rock blackfishing. Like if you go fishing for rock blackfish off the rocks, preferably get the palate of the rock blackfish eating the white bread before you use white bread. So if you just go and use white bread and expect to catch loads of rock blackfish or lubric, you're probably going to get a poorer result rather than actually burling them up. So burley them up, they can taste it by eating the mushy white bread, then you present them with a nice white fluffy white bread bait, and you can do very, very well catching lubric white sliced bread.
In the harbour, though, or off the rocks? No,
in the harbour it works quite well.
Does it? I've only had success off the rocks with bread bait.
No, in the harbour it can work quite well as well. It's better off the rocks, but in the harbour it can work quite well.
Yeah, excellent. Look, we've got to leave it there, but that's a great masterclass on thinking like a lutric. Oh, by the way, I was just doing a little bit of research, and Diamond Bay, where one of the last three ocean sewage outfalls in the state is situated, will be closed. The government have pledged that work will be done by 2020, by next year, and the three outfalls at Vaucluse and Diamond Bay will be closed and redirected to the Bondi Wastewater Treatment Plant, according to a promise from the government.
Thanks for mentioning that.
And it's an $86 million project just for you, Alex Bellissimo. So that's good news. Hey, tight lines, mate, and thanks for thinking like a lutric for us.
Take me where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and leave me up a river somewhere. Heaven's up an estuary, a river or a creek, your best mate and some two-stroke, enough to last a week. A yabby pump, a crab pot, and your favourite fishing gear. And don't forget your stubby holder to hold your yummy beer. Take me where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, I'll be up a river somewhere. No need to get too serious, just relax, that's the plan. You can have your lures and plastics, I'm an old bait man. Mullet gut and prawns rotting in the midday sun, a piscatorial perfume only appreciated by some. Let's go where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and leave me up a river somewhere. Now the world's gone crazy, people blowing themselves up. They need to sit on Sawtell Beach and watch the sun come up. I guess we take for granted this wild and beautiful land. So let's celebrate our freedom and enjoy it while we can. Let's go where the whiting are biting and the flathead are lazing in the sand, with an esky and a 10-foot tinny, and I'll be up a river somewhere. Just leave me up a river somewhere.
It's the Big Fish Think Like a Fish edition. Coming up next, Stinker.
Stinker.
On ABC Radio, this is The Big Fish.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott. How you going?
I'm going really well. Caught you bright and early on your old stomping ground, the Terranora Lakes, right up there on the border country. Getting a few crabs, too, which is great for this time of year.
Yeah, beautiful blue swimmer crabs. I was in windy Port Stephens. I was home and I'd been out in Stinkpot and I'd had a lovely, lovely day on Stinkpot. I'd caught some beautiful brim, but the wind then sprung up. And, oh, it was quite miserable. Everywhere is miserable if it's very windy. Anyway, as the wind was blowing, the phone rang, and it's the Lord of the Lake from Port Stephen, from Tweed River, on the phone and says, oh, look, he said, the weather up here is beautiful and the crabs are gone crazy. So I said, that's enough for me. So I went out to the airport at Newcastle. An hour and a half later, I'm up at on the Gold Coast. So here am I. Floating around in a big aluminium punt in the Terranora Lake, and I've been using hand lines with the Lord of the Lake. We've been up in here. We've caught some beautiful, beautiful blue swimmer crabs, and also, Scott, we've caught some cracker flathead and big, big whiting, but the biggest problem up here is brim, little brim. They just bombard you clean out of the water. But there's another trick we have up our sleeve, and that we catch the little trumpeter. You know the honking trumpeter?
Yeah.
Honk, honk. You
know, sing a little song for you, yeah. Play a little tune.
And they're spiky, stripy little things that are really good for not much at all. But they're fantastic crab bait. And anything that gets on them, they're tough, you see. They're really, really tough. But also we've been sort of invaded by thumping great eels.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
The big pike eel and the conger eel, and they're 6 foot long. Yeah.
Oh, they're scary, aren't they? Have you got the grandkids with you? They'd almost jump out of the boat when they see those.
Oh, no, they're in Brisbane at school, hopefully.
Right. That'll give them nightmares. Those trumpeter, though, there's a wonderful fellow, probably the best crabber in Warners Bay on Lake Macquarie, and he's a trumpeter advocate. He swears by trumpeter as great crab bait too. He reckons they're just terrific crab bait. He's a convert to trumpeter. I use the mullet. I like the mullet, but they reckon they're great. And Stinker, I believe you got a bit of a story about old Chucky Fowler. Not the golfer. Not the golfer, though.
No, well, every fowler seems to be a chooky.
That's right, they all get chooky.
Well, my chooky fowler I refer to, come from Coogeon, a little town up in the cane fields, up in the small crop area behind Kingscliff in the far north coast. And chooky come from up there, and he and I used to go fishing quite regularly. And we were talking last week about bridges. Remember we were talking about bridges, how I fell off the bridge.
You fell off the bridge, yeah. We were talking about fishing injuries last week, yes.
That's right. Well, when I stopped talking to you, I thought, gee, I should have mentioned Chucky. Now, what happened to Chucky? And this is probably, I've told you a lot of stories, Scott, and I'm sure you've scratched your head as I've told you, but this one you're really going to scratch your head because Chucky was and I were fishing off Boyd's Bay Bridge, the old Boyd's Bay Bridge, not the one that's there now. There's a fancy one there now. This is the old one that they replaced. Anyway, Chucky had false teeth, unfortunately for Chucky, and he burst out laughing at something. I'm not quite sure what it was, but his false teeth fell out when he was on the bridge. Now, that's only half the story because... And this is where there was a boat going under the bridge at the same time. And Chucky's teeth landed in the boat.
No.
That's what happened. As sure as I sit here, that's exactly what happened. Well, Chucky couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And the people in the boat couldn't believe it because they're motoring along fishing happily and a set of teeth landed in their boat. Well, I thought, Chucky, go and buy a casket ticket, mate. I said, that's not going to happen ever again.
And I assume he got them back. He's not a gummy shark.
Well, he just waved and jumped up and down on the bridge, and the people sort of finally figured out what was going on and returned Chucky's teeth.
Oh, that's a great yarn. That is a
great
yarn.
Isn't that a beauty?
Fantastic. Hey, now on this Think Like a Fish edition of The Big Fish, we're playing a bit of theatre of the mind. We're going underwater with you, and you're going to become the fish that you love the most and you love catching and eating the most, the mighty snapper. Here we go. He's going to transform. His skin's turning red. Oh, stinker. I love your beautiful blue eye shadow. You look fantastic.
Well, I mean, I'm like no, if I'm a snapper, I'm like no other fish in the ocean. And that is, it's all about habitat. I've heard you say that on this program many times. And habitat is the key to catching fish. Because there's a lot of places, Scott, that you won't catch snapper. And that's where the habitat is not suitable. So the first thing you need to do is determine what is the best habitat for the snapper to live in. Well, let's think about it. Great sandy stretches and barren sandy deserts under the water are not the places that snapper gather. They will gather over reefs, rocky reefs, and the reason for that is that they eat crustaceans, and the crustaceans will gather and grow on the reef. So that's where you head. You go to those places. If it's in close, then that's where I go fishing. In real close, the snapper come in very, very close when the waves are breaking, because they're looking for crabs that lose their grip and topple into the sea. They're crunching on all sorts of crustaceans that loosen up in a big sea, and they get very excited in that white water. And then I hang around there in stink pot. I'll toss in an unweighted bait. Now, I haven't tried crabs yet, but I reckon crabs would be a great bait. And prawns, oh, big prawns. They love big prawns. They might like a fresh fillet of bonito or slimy mackerel. They'll go with the pilchard. There's not much that a snapper won't have a crack at. They're scavengers, really. And so the places, the first thing you need to identify before you target a snapper is to figure out the habitat in which they live.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there are lots of places where there's good habitat, but they can be isolated too. You live in an area where it connects, and so the fish would move around, but they're not going to, I guess, swim over miles of sand, are they, to get to a spot, unless there's been a big sea or something?
Not really. They like I say, they're after comfort, they're after safety, but most of all, they're after food and also somewhere they can breed. Now, really, when it all boils down, they're not much different to us, really, because that's what drives us. But one of the some anomalies of snapper in our area that really isn't sort of common in other areas is that they will cruise into the harbour. They will come into the harbour in the really, really calm water, particularly when it's wild outside, and they will move along the breakwalls and into the deep parts of Port Stephens for a rest. And Port Stephens is also full of tiny little snapper, little squire, little fellas that wouldn't even fill the palm of your hand. And that's the next generation. So it's a whole big cyclical thing with the snapper, and really I find them the most intriguing, beautiful fish in the ocean, and quite frankly they perform better than most in the kitchen. So that's why I focus my attention on snapper.
You cannot not admire them. Every snapper you catch is worth looking at, isn't it? Even those little tiny ones, the bright neon blue spots, and then the rosy red, and then the big ones that have the character of their own, the individual humps, and some have the giant humps and others don't have the big bumps. I mean, that's a really interesting thing too, the bony structure of them, those bigger ones.
Well, what probably amazes me most or intrigues me most is the power that they can generate over a short distance, Scott. Particularly in shallow water where I fish, and I use 20-pound line and a 5 or 6-0 hook and no lead at all, or the tiniest, tiniest lead that wouldn't be the size of the nail on your little finger. And then I toss the bait right into that area. But when they hit, it is the most extraordinary power, and you've got to be ready for it. You've got to have your reel set up. You've got to have everything in place, because once that fish hits, there's no turning him for a while anyway. He's got to expend his energy in that first driving run. And if you're not ready for that, he's going to leave you in a shivering, blithering mess, whether you've been on the rocks or in a boat. See, on the rocks is another spot, Scott, particularly in a bit of a sea. And then you can throw that unweighted bait, or you can use quarter-pound lead and throw it out onto the reef and then hang on, because when they take off, it's like nothing else.
That's great. Oh, look, we'll let you come up from the depths now, mate, before you get barra trauma. here he comes. He's coming back up from the bottom. Hey, Tightline Stinker, thanks for being a snapper for us, and we'll catch you next time on The Big Fish.
Hey, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Well, I've been fishing in the sea of love. I've been trying to catch a one I've been dreaming of. I guess I caught me 4 or 5, just enough to keep my hopes alive. I let them go cause they wouldn't do, but I caught a keeper when I caught you. I caught a keeper when I caught you. Now when my friends see what I got, they'd be cruising on over to my lucky spot. I tell them that's all right by me. There's lots of fish in the deep blue sea, but you're my limit and I don't need to, cause I caught a keeper when I caught you. I caught a keeper when I caught you. On the day I found you, the one my heart adored, I put my arms around you and I hollered, man overboard. So glad you never got away. I'm gonna keep you near me night and day. You're the best of the whole darn batch. You're my once in a lifetime catch. And now my fishing days are through, cause I caught a keeper when I caught you. I caught a keeper when I caught you. Night and day. You're the best of the whole darn batch. You're my once-in-a-lifetime catch. But now my fishing days are through, 'cause I caught a keeper when I caught you. Yes, I caught a keeper when I caught you. I caught a keeper when I caught you. I caught a keeper when I caught you.
The wise master says, to know the fish, you must think like the fish. Roden Woodham's our blue water man. Welcome back to the Big Fish.
G'day, Scotty. How are you, mate?
Any of those beautiful pelagic, those deep water, offshore, blue water fish that roam the planet that you love so much, which one would you like to transform into right now? We have the magical power to do this.
Well, Scott, 9 times out of 10... I would be a majestic blue marlin, but today I'm going to be the fisherman's nemesis. I am Mako.
Mr. Mako Shark, good morning. Welcome to the Big Fish program. How's your day been going so far?
It's been going really good, except there's very annoying ringing noise in my ear.
What's that?
I think it's an 8 horsepower. Yes, it is. It's a Johnson. It's a Johnson, and it's on a tinny, and it's doing my head in. I had a big night last night, mate, going up with all the boys. I can't stand the noise. Yes, that's it. I'm going to eat a motor and then jump on some fishermen.
That's what, you've been known to do this before, haven't you? Tell us about some of the other antics you've been up to in that regard.
One of the great things we Mako Sharks find is when we find a small boat, we try to jump as close to it as possible. Therefore frightening the living daylights out of those puny human beings inboard.
So how big are you? Are you one of the bigger boys? I know you're a fairly mature member of your family, aren't you?
I'm a lady, Scott.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm a female, and I'm 614 kilograms. I'm 4.6 metres long. I'm 2 metres around the girth. I have 1,967 teeth, of which 212 are operable. I can go from 0 to 90 kilometres an hour in 2 body lengths, and I like to eat tuna and mahi-mahi, normally tuna. But my favourite game is swimming up the sports fishing boats, because shark fishermen are not very smart, eating all 3 baits, cruising over, biting the motor, and then eating their burley bucket, and then sounding down to 300 metres, and then coming up and driving my head through the bottom of their boat. I love it.
What about, I don't know if it was you or one of your kin who jumped into the boat, destroyed all the electrics, everything, really, just anything that was inside that boat. Those fishermen actually, they then jumped into your environment, didn't they? That was quite an amazing swap. What were you trying to do there? Were you trying to take off with the boat, or what was the story?
Well, Scott, modern electronics do my head in. You know, in the old days, we used to have an analog sounder going ping, ping. Now I've got all these Simrads and Garmins, and bing, 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 bing. And we're, you know, it doesn't matter if you bite the boat, it doesn't matter if you bite the motor, they don't stop. So the Union of Mako have decided to turn that noise off. We have to get into the boats. And unfortunately, those humans, once we get in, they get out, then we get out, they get in, we get in, they get out, we get out. And the noise gets turned off. Oh, and there's nothing better than the sound of a custom $2,000 37 kilogram outfit snapping as the Kiagra flies into the water. Pure joy.
Now, tell us about your home. Where do you like to live?
Well, my home is wherever there is blue water between 12 and 26 degrees. all over the world. I don't mind hanging off the coast of Gibraltar. Don't mind scooting through the Galapagos. Love to come to Australia, especially during the summer. It's a beautiful place. Basically, wherever tuna are stupid enough to stop, we will swim there. Last year, I clocked up 96,000 kilometres.
There's some frequent flyer points, and you are a frequent flyer, aren't you? Why do you like launching like a Polaris missile into the air? What's the joy of that?
Scott, the simple joy of it is we can, so we do, one. Two, it's a great way to shake off the odd remora. Three, it's a great way to have a look around. Four, it's a great way to get away from really big white sharks. And five, unless you jump into the air, you can't land in a boat. And if a mako is a true mako to the core, you don't get your mako stripe until you've landed in a boat.
And what about your love life, Mrs. Mako?
Don't talk to me about that, Scott. I've just recently finished pulling 200 very sharp mako teeth out of my back because when the boys get excited, they can't hold on with their flippers. So, you know, I dread when it comes around once every 3 to 5 years. But Scott, you know, you've got to do it.
And where usually is the this romantic liaison?
Wherever enough of them can stop me from coming.
Okay. Well, and what?
Quite honestly, with you, Scott, I'm not into them.
No. But what about your children? You don't have much to do with them either, I believe.
Well, they're fantastic. Except, you know, of course I'm a live bearer, and I start out with 12 inside me to about 18, and of course in the womb, 6 of them eat all the other babies, so that really does cut down on birthing stress.
Right. Well, that's...
So once my internal pups have gorged on all their brothers and sisters, we just take the stress out of it, you know. Instead of model, out they go, and they know to swim really quickly in the other direction away from my head.
Okay, well, that's sibling rivalry to the nth degree, isn't it? But I guess it's a dog-eat-dog world, or in your case, it's a mako-eat-mako world. Hey, look, thank you so much, Mrs. Mako. I'm sorry about mixing your gender up. You're sounding a little bit hoarse this morning, but it's been a real pleasure.
You'd be hoarse too if you'd just eaten a 50 Evan Rude, a 90 Mer Cruiser, and one of those Cut B and B150.
Oh, well, that was really enjoyable. That was... Fantastic. Mrs. Mako joining us live on The Big Fish.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
There's a singing single, a sell in celebrity. There's a rage in marriage. There's a grave in gravy. There's a dump in dumpling. A liver in delivery. There's a pay in every patriot and a spit in hospitality. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abercore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity.
All right.
If you take the two A's out of aardvark, if you take the two L's out of llama, if you take the two O's out of ooze, put them all together, they spell
hello.
But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. There's a dye in every diet. There's a gas in gastrointestinal tract. There's a man in mental illness. And ovary and overreact. Yes, there's a tuna. There's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore. Guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. Oh, water, oil, or ahi. You should give it a try. The tuna of opportunity.
He's a very silly man. Thanks to all on The Big Fish this morning, and thanks to the technological magic of the piscatorial anthropomorphic chamber and all of our experts thinking like a fish. We'll have to do it all again next Saturday. Tight lines.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.